Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guests today are Pam Dyson, the Securities and Exchange Commission's Chief Information Officer, and we have a special guest for half the program, Lacey Digman, the Securities and Exchange Commission's Chief Human Capital Officer. Pam, Lacey, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So this is a special edition because what we're doing for the first half of the show is asking about how the CIO is working with the CHCO, and I know you guys are work closely together. So let me just start there at the very beginning. Let me start with Pam. Discuss how your offices are working together, the CIO's office, the CHCO's office, around technology, around people, around all the important things that really get the mission done of the SEC. Let me start with Pam.
One of the things we work together with on a daily basis is aligning the IT strategic plan with our overall human capital strategic planning. So I work daily with Lacey's team over in OHR on targeted recruitment actions and ensuring that we have the right human capital resources to support the mission that we have, as well as any new strategic initiatives that we'll be rolling out in the short term.
And Lacey, let me throw it to you now. From your perspective, I imagine you'll agree with what Pam said there, hopefully. When you work with the CIO's office, how do you guys work together?
I'd say we work together really frequently. I mean, Pam and I are talking almost daily around some of the needs that they might have and how they're evolving. Especially here on the HR front, we have not only just the hiring side, but we also have the whole development of our team and working to help their team educate the rest of the SEC around some of their actions that they're doing through the IT strategic plan. And as Pam alluded to, we do have the human capital strategic plan that really guides the agency on how we deal with all human capital here at the SEC.
Now, a lot of times the big piece of this is when we talk about the CHCO's office and the CIO's office is the people and the workforce, but we also talk about systems as well. Imagine that the SEC, when you are looking to recruit and retain and train people, there's a systems component. Lacey, talk a little bit about that systems component too.
So in the last 5 years, we've been very lucky from an HR perspective. Pam and her team have been with us side by side as we've gone through and done a complete modernization of a majority of our human capital systems. We have two major systems that IT is helping us to deploy this summer, and it will really bring a comprehensive look at how we handle human capital here at the SEC. And it's been a great partnership. We've been very lucky, and because of that, we've seen a lot of efficiencies be gained in both of our programs and for the SEC as a whole.
And those two systems are which ones? Can you name them?
Sure. So we are doing an enterprise talent management system. It's an end-to-end of the employee lifecycle where we are, you know, from the day that we decide to hire someone all the way through them leaving the agency, all of that will be done in one integrated system, which is really transformational for not only the SEC, but for government-wide. And the second system is moving HR to more of a self-service model when it comes to IT, well, it comes to questions and any issues that employees might have. In our current environment, an employee could call up anybody in the HR world, and there's no real, we're trying to get some consistency on how we answer questions and getting that information out to them to try and alleviate the demand on the HR staff and to be able to effectively deal with all those issues that come our way on a day in and day out basis.
Now, Pam, from your perspective, your work, you're helping Lacey and her office on these systems as well. What's the system challenge from your perspective on both the enterprise talent management system and then the self-service model? Start with the enterprise talent management system. Is that a new system development? Is that taking a legacy system and modernizing it? Give me some of that insights.
So it's a new system development, but what we're doing is we are combining a number of siloed systems into one enterprise platform for talent management. So some of the complexities around that obviously would be when you're dealing with diverse systems and developers of those systems, there are a lot of complexities around bringing all that together under one enterprise solution. So we're working through that, but as Lacey alluded to, this portal then will become, you know, the primary entry point to all employees for everything OHR. So we see a lot of benefit in that. The other thing that adds a little bit of complexity to it is the various ways we allow our staff to access the systems. So we're looking at how can we be more agile and mobile with these solutions going forward so that you can access them from a smartphone, you can access them remotely. Of course, a lot of them are web-based and external service provider solutions. So single sign-on issues and security around all of this are some of the other issues that we take into consideration as we're building out these platforms.
And then the other one as well, the other system, as you talk about the self-service model, is that the same types of challenges, the ability to be mobile, to agile, to the single sign-on, that all, I imagine, applies to both systems?
Yeah, even more so. So, if it's self-service, again, we have to be able to deliver these solutions with a diverse a set of tools, a diverse workforce in terms of how they access and use those tools to access the system. So again, security is a big wrapper around all of this, as well as working through the different authentication and access protocols to ensure that, the system performs in whatever environment or atmosphere the users need it to.
Lacey, let me ask you, when you guys decided to go down this path, or when there was a decision made, I guess, by the SEC to go down this path, it's never made by one person, you guys probably went to Pam's office and said, okay, we need help. How did you guys begin that process of just saying, what are our requirements? What's our end result? How are we going to put together this new system? Because it's a major lift, and I know times in the past, agencies, you've heard stories about, well, we just throw those requirements over the fence and hope for the best, and those days hopefully are gone.
Well, I'd like to think that the great part about our organization is how Pam has actually set up her team. She has a solutions delivery team that works hand-in-hand day in and day out with my current HRIS people. So my HRIS team is our business experts, and they work with Pam's solutions delivery people. And as we started developing some of our needs around this particular the new systems that we were building, we sat down with them, and they've been involved with us from day one. And then obviously, as the systems got authorized to proceed, it only ramped up from that point on. And I think we've got a true team on this, about 20 people who are helping us integrate ourselves from our old siloed systems into this new environment. So I think it's really been a collaborative effort, and we've been very lucky because the requirements have kind of organically grown from both of those groups being involved with the day in and day out business that we do from an HR perspective.
Pam, did you guys, when you started the work with Lacey's staff and talking about requirements, did you use the agile approach, or are you using the agile, DevOps approach to say we're going to do this in iterations, let's do these sprints? Give me a sense of how with the approach you guys are taking.
We're maturing more and more towards the agile approach. Quite honestly, we're doing more of an iterative approach. And so, as I mentioned before, there are a number of different systems that we're collapsing into this one enterprise solution. So we're doing it, in iterative mode, going from system to system, looking at the requirements of those systems, and then building the capability into this end-to-end portal network. So it's not necessarily agile, but we are doing it in a phased approach to ensure that we deliver capability along the path, so that we're not doing waterfall on this, where we're waiting to modernize all of these platforms into one single solution. We're doing it system by system. So it's more of an iterative approach in this case. One of the other things that we're doing as a part of this is we're looking at the infrastructure around it. Can we pick some of this up as a platform for service or software for service? Do we want to build this out in the cloud? I think one of the things that we've done over the last year, which has been monumental, is we've built out the human capital data repository in our EDW. And so having that raw data stored in our EDW gives us a lot of leverage and opportunities and options on how we want to continue to modernize and enhance this overall life cycle talent management system for the agency.
And Lacey, as Pam's staff has worked with you guys on this system, did you change your business processes? Did you relook at the way you've been doing things over the last, 5, 10, 15 years or longer and say, hey, maybe there's a better way and let's build that into the new system?
Yes, definitely. So I've been in my role now over 5 years, and in the last 5 years, we've looked at almost every process within HR and really diagrammed it out and figured out where we could find efficiencies. And so as part of that process, it's really prepared us for moving towards the enterprise talent management system. And so I'd like to think that we've enhanced a lot of our processes along the way, but one of the things, as we are now currently in the development stages for the beginning phase of this system, we are doing is we are also modifying and for some of these processes, creating new ones. One of our particular modules that will be built out in the system is not actually in an electronic environment currently. And so we are just developing as we go along, trying to be agile in that respect, because it is very important for us that we get it right and to kind of think differently about how we've done things than in the past, where it's been completely manual. So we're definitely enhancing what we do along the way.
I think that's the key. A lot of times when I talk to CIOs and talk to the mission owners, and you know, are you just if the old paving the cow path, lifting and shifting, whatever analogy you want to use, but as long as they're relooking at their business processes, and sometimes that's the hardest part. Has that been the most difficult thing so far, Lacey, in terms of this idea of what are we doing today? How can we do it better tomorrow? I mean, as you said, you've looked at it over the last 5 years, but then new technology comes along and that opens up a new can of worms in many ways.
It does. And I think the one nice part that we have about this is that we have a very condensed deployment of our first phase. And as part of that, it doesn't give you a lot of time to go back and reflect and think, ooh, should that old outdated government form be put into the system? Do we really need it in that form to be printed out and everything along those lines? And that's a very, I hate to say it, typical government approach sometimes, is to just naturally try and make it look exactly like it does now. And because we're being flexible in all this, I've seen a lot of my staff and Pam's team really think differently about some of how we want this to look in the long run. And the good part is that the vendor is also working with us and has done this before in other government agencies, and we have a lot of lessons learned that we can leverage.
Pam, you mentioned the key word there, cloud, potentially platform as a service, software as a service even. How much is the cloud playing a role in this effort? I mean, is it the type of thing where it's automatically going to a cloud, whether it's the SEC private cloud or some kind of hybrid or public cloud? Where does this, if you will, leading edge technology fit?
We are still developing our cloud strategy, but certainly this would be a good candidate. We have a number of external service providers that have their own clouds in this space. So, you know, we would take a look at those. In addition to that, we are continuing to mature our enterprise data warehouse. And so the next logical step to our EDW is to develop a hybrid solution in the cloud for some of the processes that we do there. So certainly, as I mentioned before, there are certain vendors who will offer this as a service to us in the cloud, as well as we could move the platform to the cloud. It really depends on, again, the authentication, the access, how we want our users to interface with the system. Because this is a mission-critical system for all of our employees, this will touch every employee in the SEC. Our first iteration of this will likely be on-prem, and we would look at moving it to an externally hosted provider or, you know, again, as a software service in the cloud down the road.
Is one of the concerns or one of the reasons maybe you're not going to the cloud first or right from the start, is a security concern, or is it just maybe a cost benefit, meaning let's get it done, let's improve it, and then let's have a next step, you know, 6 months, a year, 2 years down the road?
Well, security is always of utmost importance to us. That's the least of the concern. I think the business case and the business model on the way we will interact with the system is our main driver for that. We feel fairly confident that, and because we mostly do business with FedRAMP certified cloud providers, that security is not the highest hurdle. Of course, our human capital data, you know, is very critical, very crucial, and very sensitive. And so we want to make sure we protect that at all times. But it's really the business model that we're trying to work out. And then, of course, the cost-benefit analysis. But again, in most organizations, as you develop your cloud strategy, you look at those applications that are closer to the environment, that are used daily, that employees interact with more constantly. Those are the ones that you move kind of slower to the cloud. We tend to keep those close on-prem. We get experience with it, and then we move it out. And I think this talent management system falls into that category.
And I imagine, Lacey, from your perspective, you look at Pam and say, sure, if cloud works, great. If not, it, you know, let's do what makes the most sense. You're worried about that final result. Is, am I getting the benefits of the new system? Are the employees finding it easy to use? That's probably what you are most concerned about.
Definitely. I mean, from our end, we want to make sure that the end user experience is enhanced as much as possible. And we really want to defer to the experts in IT and Pam and her team to let us know what exactly the right way we should handle this.
I think that makes sense. It's when the HR people start talking cloud and cybersecurity, Pam may want to get a little worried. I don't know. One of the things, Lacey, about this system is the benefits it's going to bring eventually. And talk just a little bit about the timing. When do you expect the first module? Or that may be a better Pam question. But then I guess the follow-up is when will the HR staff and other SEC employees start seeing the benefits of these systems? So I don't know if you want to do timing first with Pam or if, Lacey, you want to go there first.
Well, let me take this one. This is Lacey. I think the key thing here is that we've been very lucky. Pam's team has been dedicated to this. And so we kicked this off about a month and a half ago, and we are going to have employees in the system by July. We have a very short deployment schedule, and they will be hitting the first few. They'll be hitting four of the modules in the 11 modules that we plan to deploy over the next 18 months. So we're on a very good time frame here.
And Pam, from your perspective, does Lacey's time frame make sense from an IT perspective?
Yeah, absolutely.
I was hoping you were going to say that, by the way.
It absolutely does make sense. As Lacey said, we've had a lot of engagement. Our two offices have partnered on this solution for a while now. We have a path forward and a roadmap. And more importantly, again, we have a phased iterative approach into how we're going to roll the system out. So we're well on our way. And as she said, hopefully within 18 months, we'll have all the modules delivered.
We have to take a break. My guest is Lacey Digman, the Chief Human Capital Officer at the Security Exchange Commission, and Pam Dyson, the Chief Information Officer at the SEC. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. This is a special edition of Ask the CIO. Today, we're talking with Pam Dyson, the Securities and Exchange Commission's Chief Information Officer, and Lacey Digman, the Security and Exchange Commission's Chief Human Capital Officer. So we've spent a lot of time talking about these two big priorities. Lacey, from your perspective, are there other priorities that you're working on as well when it comes to specifically in the HR IT world, whether it's a workforce item or other system issues? Are you upgrading? Are you changing anything?
Well, I mean, the benefit that we've had is, like I said, over the last 5 years, we've really modernized what we offer. And so Pam's team has been hand in hand with us over the last 5 years. The Enterprise Talent Management System will kind of end cap all of the IT systems that we will need, because we've done a new payroll system. We have done an entire workflow system for all of our modernized forms. And this is it for us. I mean, the next parts will really be just in sustaining those systems and making sure that they're optimized to the utmost. So I consider myself very lucky that of the support that I've had from Pam and her team and the agency. And, you know, for most government agencies, you wouldn't have this much attention focused on an HR environment, but it's paid off in dividends, and the agency's seen that. So I think that right now we're in a good space.
It's so nice to hear that, because so often you hear about legacy systems and, you know, people have, Pam and I probably will talk about this later in the show, is IT modernization such a difficult item for so many agencies? It's good to see that, at least from your perspective in the HR world, that you seem to be more modernized than maybe others, or maybe you were, you know, 5, 7, 10 years ago. Do you feel like the systems you're using today, while always could be better, are, as you said, meeting your needs as best as possible, given budget and other constraints?
Definitely. I mean, the government environment is very unique, and I think there's a couple of untapped areas, but that is really because those are government standards and something that we can't touch from an SEC perspective. But I want to say that everything that we have an opportunity to modernize and enhance, Pam and her team have helped us get there, and which is great.
Let's talk workforce a little bit now, because that's the other piece. So I imagine that Pam and your office work together on. Pam's probably desperate for cybersecurity experts, data scientists. She's probably desperate for project and program managers who need training. I'm just guessing here. Talk a little bit about the workforce piece and how you guys work together to ensure that the IT staff have the right education, training, skills, et cetera.
Yes, yeah, so I'll take that. Lacey's team's been instrumental, I mean, crucial, and us being able to advance this program as much as we've advanced it. And so you hit on all the key positions that we're looking for today, certainly cybersecurity experts, data scientists, cloud architects, programmers. But more importantly, as you mentioned earlier, we're really looking at moving into an agile development model, DevOps development model going forward. So we need to bring to bear those skill sets that can help us advance our program in that direction. So we work very closely with Lacey's team, who's really skilled at helping us craft the right position descriptions, help us with targeted recruitment to make sure that we're getting the right skill sets to do those jobs going forward. And that's been one of the most beneficial parts of my relationship with Lacey, is not only helping us to grow in the system area, but helping us to grow in the human capital space as well.
Pam, one of the things that it gets down to when you talk about the skill sets, everybody needs the same skill sets, right? If you any CIO I talk with, any CIO you talk with, probably would tick off those, you know, cybersecurity, data scientists, agile, and the like. How are you working with Lacey's group? Because sometimes, again, like requirements for systems, they throw it over the fence and hope it happens. Sometimes the opposite happens when missionaries throw it over the fence and say to the HR folks, okay, hire me this. How do you make sure that, again, that requirements just don't get thrown over the fence, but there's a hiring manager involved and there's the working relationship is there to meet your needs?
So here's the good part. The same way we have an IT team dedicated and focused to OHR, Lacey has the same relationship with us. She has a dedicated IT team who has subject matter experts that understand the field of technology, that works on us from cradle to grave in developing what our requirements are, helping us to flesh out what skill sets it is in the position that we're looking for, help us with diversity efforts, help us with targeted recruiting efforts. And so they are with us from the initiation of a position action until we actually onboard the person, and actually does follow up to the onboard to make sure that we were satisfied with the skill set that we bought in. So that has been her level of commitment to OIT, is she has a team directly focused to IT to make sure that we get those skill sets that we need.
And the one thing I would chime in is, not only is it about getting those people in the door, but the nice part is Pam and I have had a recent initiative underway where we're assessing the skill sets of her current entire team and trying to figure out where there might be some skill gaps that we need to tackle, and to bring in some of those additional certifications that would really be beneficial as her program is evolving. And we're working hand in hand, and we hope to, by this summer, have a really good a skills assessment done so that she can kind of, we can work with her to inform her on where we need to bring in additional training and additional assistance to kind of make her team top notch.
Lacey, from your experience, is this unusual to have a group within the human capital office that focuses only on one part of the mission, in this case, IT?
Well, I think the key thing is we've designated people within the HR space that they have certain groups that they will always service, so that there's a lot of continuity. They get to learn their different programs that they're supporting. And so it's a member from my staffing team, a member from the university. There's a member from, I have a group of IO psychologists who really helps, and they get together and they talk through the issues with Pam and her team to figure out where we need to go and what their high-level priorities are. So from a HR perspective, on an annual basis, we sit down with every division office at the SEC on an annual basis, if not more frequently, and talk about what their needs are, what their priorities are, tied into the budget, what we're requesting from Congress, so that we can align them and go back to HR and make sure that we're delivering from our end to help them get where they want to be. And so I think it's that close coordination. It's critical, and that's something we've learned over the last few years. But that doesn't mean that the beauty of this is that, you know, the person who works on the IT program might also have some tie-in with our division of economic and risk analysis. And so there's some commonalities between those different programs and what they're looking for. So we really try and make sure that we're thinking about our customers and what we can do to deliver what exactly they need.
Now, that skills assessment, that's interesting, because I know that the Office of Management and Budget and Office of Personnel Management have asked agencies to look at their cyber workforce and do a skill gap assessment. Pam, is this related to that, or is that a secondary one that you said, well, if we're just looking at cyber, why don't we look at everything?
It's related, but certainly we prioritize the cybersecurity skill set, because, as you know, that's one of the most highly demanded skill sets that we have right now, and it's also the most critical. So it's all a part of our strategy that we work with Lacey, but we certainly have prioritized the cybersecurity skill set.
What about training? Because I think a lot of times we in the news media, if you will, and when we talk to CIOs and chief human capital officers like we are, discussion revolves around recruitment. Can you find the right people? Can you bring them in? But what about the people who are already working for you? Lacey, talk a little bit about the training and how's technology playing a role in that training, whether it's a learning management system or other types of online training?
Sure. So in our current enterprise talent management system, one of the first modules we'll be deploying is our learning management module. And so we are upgrading to a new way to approach learning management. We have a very good, solid team in the SEC University. There's about 30 individuals over there who work on a day-in and day-out basis to make sure that the SEC has the utmost in training. And we are very lucky to be able to say that we do spend a good amount of money and resources on making sure that our employee base is trained appropriately. So the nice part is that with working with Pam's team, we have done some assessments. We are doing an agency-wide skills assessment. As Pam said, we're very focused on the cybersecurity, but we're also looking at everything we need when it comes to any potential skill gaps. And we do training not only in person, we do a lot of virtual, and we do a lot of different types of media formats to make sure that people get the learning in the different ways that they might be able to retain it and take it away. So we really try and look to what we're trying to train on and how that might be easily absorbed by the employees so that they can use it immediately after having gone through a program.
Are you finding that the way employees want to learn or the way employees are learning has changed from a just-in-time model, meaning, okay, I got to figure out this topic today, or are you seeing still some of that, hey, I have to take so many, earn so many credits per year, let me do that once a month or once every other month? How's the learning of the employees changing?
There's a very consistent base, and a lot of that is just on the more like how the SEC operates and what you need to do to be able to help us meet our mission. But I want to say that the beauty of the flexibility of training really is that besides that core, what we do see is a lot of flexibility around delivering specific modules that might be just in time based on what's happening in the markets or what is needed from the employees because a new regulation has come out or some new requirements have come out. So we try and vary it, and we've been lucky that we can do that. And Pam's team has helped us because they've brought in several different electronic systems that will allow us to deploy the training in different formats so that employees can absorb it in a way that will be easiest for them to be able to take it and apply it immediately.
And I would say specific to IT, Lacey's team has been instrumental in helping us bring in training tools that are scalable and customizable so people can develop their own training paths. It'll prepare you for examinations for certificates, things so that they're specifically targeted to the IT professional. And so in addition to that, we will sit down with her team and customize training based on innovations and solutions that we're in the process of deploying. And so it really is a very good teamwork model that we're using to ensure that we're crafting training for our specific needs based on the technologies that we used here, as well as the innovations and solutions that we're planning to roll out.
And that was actually part of my other question for you, Pam, about the training of IT. A lot of times CIOs look outside their agency, whether it's for, you know, the defense, National Defense University or Defense Acquisition University, or you reach out to, you know, the private sector. Do you use those tools as well, or are you mostly doing things in-house and maybe bringing in, you know, taking advantage of the online training with a third party as well?
Yeah, so we do a combination of all of that. We do everything from vendor-provided training to CBT. We certainly use SEC University, who really now has a very exhaustive and robust list of training for our individuals. Again, each individual can in IT can determine what they want their career path to be, and we use a combination of these tools to make sure we get them in their individual development plans where they want to be from a career perspective.
One additional thing I'd like to just throw in here is that the nice part about what we've done as well in-house is we also have a career development center in HR. So as an employee is thinking about where they might want to go in their career, what additional information they might need, there's career counselors that they can consult with, and they can kind of help them walk them through what their options might be and how they can sit down and have a real strong dialogue with their management team on where they want to go and what additional certifications they might need.
This has been a fascinating conversation. Unfortunately, for this part of the show, we are out of time. So I'd like to thank my guests, Lacey Digman, the SEC's Chief Human Capital Officer. Pam Dyson has been with us as well, the SEC's Chief Information Officer. Pam's going to stick around as we're going to talk all IT for the last half of the show. So let me say, Lacey, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest is Pam Dyson, the Security and Exchange Commission's Chief Information Officer. Now, Pam, before break, we were talking a lot about you and your relationship and working with Lacey Dingman, the SEC's Chief Human Capital Officer. For the last half of this show, we're just going to talk all IT. So let me start out with some older priorities. You were on the show probably about 18 months ago, and we covered a lot of ground. One of them was the Enterprise Data Warehouse, which you also mentioned earlier on in the program. But give us an update on that project and how much benefits are you guys starting to see from it?
The Enterprise Data Warehouse project, I would like to call it a program now, has really taken off here at the SEC. One of the big benefits is we've matured the system. So we have a lot of new data sets in the EDW as well as a lot of analytical tools that run on top of that. So what we've seen is in the beginning we had a select group of skilled employees that could do the work using certain tools, and they perform those tools in their area of work. We've expanded that now across some of our major divisions like enforcement and our OC program. So we have more than 70 enforcement employees, for example, using the EDW and analytical tools to mine data that's in the EDW. And we're growing to over 1,000 users in our exam program. So now the EDW is being used for high-speed analytics, and it's starting to become more of a dependency in the mission of the work of some of these agencies, more than just a surprise that, oh, we can, in addition to storing all this data, we can also run analytics on it. So it's become really a staple in our data analytics program at this point.
And what's fascinating is the more people use it, the easier it becomes to use, because you get to kind of the train-the-trainer methodology where, hey, if I train you and you train this person and that person trains
Absolutely.
Two other people.
And that's how we've been able to scale this up. And again, we started with a very small group of skilled employees that could leverage these tools. And so now we've grown that by, almost 2,000 users.
When you look at the tools that are running on it now, what types of tools are you using today, and what types of tools are you looking for maybe, in the next 6 or 9 months?
Yeah, so we have a diverse set of analytics tools that we use and ETL tools that we use. We're continuing to use Netezza. We use large-scale tools like Palantir and MicroStrategy, but we also do use a lot of open-source tools as well. So for our data analytics tools and program in general, there's a diverse set of tools that we use, and a lot of those are also custom-built and developed by our business subject matter experts. So it's a full combination, a full suite of tools, leveraging some main staples, large-scale tools like Palantir and MicroStrategy.
And do you foresee a need in the future of specific tools, or they come up, as you mentioned, as the business leaders say, hey, what if we had a tool that did this, and then you do that, buy versus build analysis?
We certainly look at the requirements. Again, that's the important role that the business subject matter experts bring to IT, because we can converse with them on what those requirements are, what thresholds they need, and then we make a decision about whether or not that's something we want to buy off the shelf or something we want to develop in-house ourselves.
And it's interesting because part of the early part of the conversation, you brought up the EDW program mm-hmm. as well. And when we were talking about cloud, remind me again, this EDW is in the cloud, or are you looking at cloud for this?
This EDW is completely on-prem, but we are looking at a hybrid model where we expand to the cloud, mostly for storage and to pick up more processing and compute speed, but basically augment what we have on-prem to the cloud. So that really is kind of phase two of the EDW, is for us to start to look at expanding to the cloud.
Do you have a time frame on that, or do you need any kind of...
We're starting that this year. We're starting to look at some models that we believe that will work for us, considering all of the type of work streams that we're now doing, the types of tools that we're using. Of course, cloud providers also offer many of these tools in the cloud. So we're looking at our enterprise license agreements. Does it make sense for us to manage this locally? Would we procure these tools from the cloud providers? So a lot of that discussion is going to start to happen this year. We're looking more of an 18-month time frame in terms of starting to build out phase two of the EDW.
All right, so don't blame me when you start getting those calls from those providers now who
yeah.
will say to you, hey, we could do this.
Of course. We're already talking to them.
Of course. I would hope so, at least. Another big priority when we talked about 18 months ago was something called the Work Smarter IT Modernization Effort. Remind us what that is and then tell us where you're at with it.
Yeah, so that actually started under my predecessor, Tom Baer, when he was CIO here. And so our Work Smarter initiative at the time was more about our BPI efforts and business process improvement, automating workflows, going in, looking at the way the divisions did business, and then building automated work processes around them. At the same time, we took on a multi-year effort to modernize our infrastructure. And the key there was to make it more robust and more agile. And so over the course of the last 18 months, we've done this automated business process improvement, and we've also modernized our infrastructure. So today we're seeing the benefits of our data center virtualization efforts. We've built out shared enterprise platforms, which allow for data sharing and federated services. We have more mobile capability. We have more remote access. And the speed of our network is tenfold to what it was. We had a 1 gig network 18 months ago. We're up to a 10 gig network today. So we're starting to see all of the benefits that was laid out in the roadmap for Work Smarter, but now we're starting to move more to our digital transformation and our automation processes. So a lot of our workflows still involve a lot of paper. We're looking at how we can digitize and automate even further so that we can really see the benefit and cost savings of this whole initial Work Smart initiative.
Now, the digitization, you have to be careful. As we talked with Lacey earlier in the program, you don't want to do a lift and shift. You want to relook at your business processes.
Absolutely.
You seem to at least begin that process, too. How is the digital services and innovation being built into this process?
Our BPI initiative continues to go on. We partner with a number of consultants who've been on this journey with us, I guess, for the last 5 years. But again, all of that, when we start new IT investments, one of the things we go after, especially in today's budget environments, is cost savings, where we can achieve cost savings, where we can become more agile, where we can become more effective, at the same time saving costs, reducing systems, automating processes that are now very manual and laborious. So all of that is a part of our requirements gathering effort to include sometimes a upfront business process reengineering effort to make sure that we can bring to bear the benefits of these efficiencies in whatever solution we develop.
We have to take a break. My guest is Pam Dyson, the Securities and Exchange Commission's Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com at 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com at 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest is Pam Dyson, the Securities and Exchange Commission's Chief Information Officer. We've talked a little bit about some older priorities. Let's jump into some new priorities. What are you looking to get done? You gave us probably a little bit of a heads up on some of them, but what are some of the other things you're looking to get done over the next 6 or 9 months?
One of the things I'm really excited about is we are developing our 1 to 3 year IT strategic plan. And of course, this plan will align with the agency's strategies and priorities, goals, and objectives. But more importantly, it will link how IT is an enabler of that. And as I mentioned before, you know, we're trying to be leaner and more efficient. And so one of the things that we're looking at is trade-offs, how new innovations can help us become more efficient, how we can save costs around that. So we hope to lay out that strategy and an implementation plan in our new IT strategic plan that we'll be releasing later this year. So I'm very excited about that. We're going to continue to develop our analytics platforms. I mean, when I go out and talk to the business, everybody, and this is not unique to the SEC, but, you know, we're very data-centric. We collect a lot of data here at the SEC. So everybody wants to be able to ingest, mine, analyze more data. And so in order to do that, we have to build very robust data analytics platform. Of course, we're going to be looking at our cloud partners to help us in that effort. We don't necessarily want to build these on-prem, and the time to delivery is much quicker in the cloud. So we're looking at leveraging the cloud to do a lot of that. And then third, and certainly not the least important on our list, is we want to continue to grow and mature our cybersecurity program and tools. You know, so the threat landscape now is broader than it's ever been. You know, the frequency and sophistication of exploits continue to grow. So we want to be ahead of that, and we want to continue to grow our continuous monitoring programs and bring tools into the organization that will help us along that journey as well.
Several things to unpack there. Let me start with the IT strategic plan. One of the things about any IT strategic plan is looking into the future, right? So you have to say, okay, where are we today and where do we want to be in, you know, as you said, 1 to 3 years? How are you doing that? Is that the old enterprise architecture, or is this not IT centric per se, but this is mission centric?
Oh, this is mission centric. So the first thing we did was engage the business. And as you know, EA is a business effort. And so we bring in the EA team and we talk to the business about what are you doing today and how do you see yourself doing that differently over the next 1 to 3 years. And so we bring in the EA portion of that. We sit down and we have discussions with the business and we start to ferret out the requirements for that. So the very first touch point was with the business on this. And then again, as you mentioned, bringing in our enterprise architecture group to help us roadmap out that path. So that's where we started. And so what will come out of this is what we believe is consensus on what our focus and priority initiative should be as for the agency as a whole over the next 1 to 3 years.
And, of course, things change as Congress tells you to change something or do something else. So you have to be agile enough, which we talked
Absolutely.
About, just in case of when those board members come and tell us, hey, do this now. That's obviously being worked in. Do the business folks, generally speaking, know where they want to go? Or do you have to help them? Because they say, well, we want to be able to do this quicker.
Well, we certainly have to rationalize it because they want to do a lot, right? So like any other business, of course, they have lots of ideas on where they want to go. Oftentimes, you know, we benchmark against private sector in terms of what, you know, other banks and financial institutions are doing, who, by the way, have very you know, high-budgeted IT programs and so forth. So a lot of what we come in to do is to try to rationalize this. As I mentioned before, we're also looking for trade-offs. So there's legacy systems, there are legacy workflows and processes and capabilities that we will also take a look at, and this is where EA is really helpful. We'll take a look at it and say, you know, if we build out this solution, in some ways it's a spend to save, in other ways it'll be immediate cost savings to it. You know, if we retire these systems, you know, if we offline this and we build out this solution, we can still get the impact that we want and save and reduce costs at the same time.
I think that's key, is explaining those trade-offs. If we can consolidate, merge, improve upon, then we'll have money for these other things you're looking for that maybe are new.
Exactly. So, you know, we go into it with a budget neutral mindset initially, and considering even that our budget could continue to be reduced. But I think that is one of the reasons why we look for these trade-offs are so key to us being able to continue to innovate and advance the program, even under tight budget situations.
One of the other priorities you mentioned was around cybersecurity. Now, we know that there's some sensitivities there, but can you talk a little bit about how you're maturing that effort? There's the Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation Program that the Department of Homeland Security is running. I think you're a part of some of those, one of the groups.
Yep.
Talk a little bit about where that fits in, the Einstein Program and any other initiatives.
We have a layered approach. So, you know, we certainly participate in the Department of Homeland Security initiatives. But in addition to that, I think one of the biggest advancements that we've done over the last 12 months is we've stood up our own security operations center. So we have a 24/7 SOC operation where we monitor the network constantly. So we not only do we watch the perimeter, we watch everything that's within the SEC domain. We have employed data leakage protection tools so that we can watch information as it moves across the network and things of that nature. So I don't want to tip my hand too much, but those are the types of efforts and tools. And a lot of the tools are becoming much more effective. So we want to automate as much as this as possible. So we're looking to continue to mature and develop some of the solutions that we've brought in around that program.
Unfortunately, Pam, we're out of time. There's so much more to talk about. I know we'll have you back on the show soon. But I'd like to thank Pam Dyson, the Securities and Exchange Commission's Chief Information Officer. Pam, thanks so much for taking the time to join us today.
I appreciate it. It was my pleasure to come on your show. Thank you.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.